reminded last night, Glenn and I were at a leadership team meeting in our church, and our pastor reminded us that between Glenn and I, there's 110 years of experience. So between the two of us, we certainly are long in the tooth. And Dr. Dan, he reminded me that since the Olympics are just over, that some of you have cards back there that you're going to be holding out to score this sermon. So be kind. All I can say is just be kind. It is always an honor for me to share with you and to come and be with you. I must confess that when I do come to giving this opportunity, my mind just explodes with stuff that I want to say to you. Like, there's so many thoughts that sort of come into my mind. They're like ducks that are scattered all over the road, and I, for the life of me, can't get those ducks lined up. They're just scattered all over. So sometimes whenever I come here, I just feel like I'm going here and here and here. And so I'm just going to ask your forgiveness right up front, that my thoughts are probably going to be scattered. I trust that you recognize what a wonderful opportunity you have to rub shoulders with the men and women at this seminary. Your professors, the staff, the people that are here, they're some of the most godly, amazing people that you'll ever get a chance to be with. The seminary I graduated from, there were about 5,000 students. And to be able to try to have a conversation with them, or to be able to connect with them, or to be a part of a journey group with them, that was unthinkable. But here you get to sit down with, to me, many of my heroes, from Dr. Robb to Dr. Watson, Dr. Peacock, the Booth combination here, Dr. Don, all throughout. We just have such amazing professors here. And I want you to know they pray for you regularly. Like they come together and pray for you. They pray for students who've come through this place. They prepare classes to challenge you and to stretch you and to make you think and to grow in Christ likeness, to love God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, with all your strength. So here's my thought. I'm assuming, and I believe, that you've heard many great sermons this year. You just came out of, what was this, lectureship?
Academic.
So you just came out. I sat in on the last one, or one on Wednesday, and I was just really amazed at what the fellow was sharing. I don't guess he was young, but like a little bit older. But anyway, I was impressed. And so the whole idea for me is I'm not sure that you need another sermon. I think we probably heard about all the sermons we need for a while. What I think we need is we need a challenge to put into practice maybe what we already know. Like we've got so much information. You can go to the internet and listen to a lot better sermon than I could ever preach to you today. But who's helping you to connect the dots? Who's helping you to process what you're hearing and what you're reading? And so what I would like to do today is I want to give you some context and some history of this school that you've chosen and hopefully felt called to be a part of. When you've lived as long as I've lived, and let's just agree, I'm 64, I turned 65 this year. When you've lived that long, I mean, I was thinking about that, Glenn. A lot of times we could put three or four of these students together and still not get to 110. But when you've lived as long as I've lived, there has to be some advantage, right? Well, I'm the keeper of the stories for this school. I am the keeper of the stories for the Canadian Southern Baptist Seminary. I was on the founding board of trustees for this school before there was anything here, when this was just a piece of property. We had no experience, the trustees. Most of us were pastors. I'd been in Canada for 1 year when I was invited to be. I'd started the church in Winnipeg in 1984, and in 1985, at a convention in Kelowna, the decision was made to start a convention and a school. And so I was on that founding board of trustees. We had one guy who had experience. He was Terry Wooster, and he had helped to start the UVic, University of Victoria, school, law school out there. But he was the only one who had experience. The rest of us, there was nothing impressive about us. We were totally dependent upon God. At our meetings, we normally spent the first hour just praying and saying, "Oh God, please help." Because we had no idea what we were doing. We oversaw the development of the curriculum. We hired the first president, Clint Ashley. We brought the faculty together. We had three IMB missionaries that came together to form that first faculty. We bought property and had partners come and help us build the first administration building, where it's the admin building now, but that's where that was our first building. And in 1987, the building wasn't even completed when we started classes, and so they met in the maintenance shed, which is now the student housing. Guest housing. So that's sort of the beginning of this place. There's so many God stories. You could ask Kathy about Dr. Keith Wills, who helped us. We didn't have any books. If you're going to have a school, you need books. And so Dr. Keith Wills, he helped us get books, and he helped us people to donate books to us. And now we've got one of the greatest theological libraries. We're just blessed. So many of those God stories. We looked all over Calgary for property. We had three sheets of paper we went through. And as we looked, we were trying to find property. Well, back in those days, property in Calgary was still $1 million an acre. And so we looked around, and it was going to take more than an acre for you guys. And so we came out to Cochrane. There were about 3,000 people. And there was a plot of land. It just pasture where there were ground, what do they call those groundhogs? Prairie dogs, or what do they call them? There were these prairie dogs and cow pods and all that kind of stuff. 167 acres for $167,000. Duh! I mean, we look so brilliant now, don't we? $1,000 an acre. And there were just a very small community, 3,000 people in Cochrane. If you go out the main doors here, if you were to go out those doors and you walk over towards the fence, that's about where we gathered, and we stepped over the prairie dogs and the cow pods, and we stepped over all that, and we took some sod and we turned it over and we prayed, and we said, God, we pray that one day men and women would gather on this hill and prepare and be trained to go out and serve in ministry. As a matter of fact, as a memory of that day, they gave us this shovel. And it says, Canadian Southern Baptist Seminary, groundbreaking administration building, 4787. Now, I know a lot of times when oil companies, when they break ground, they have a nice silver oil, Well, this, we're a mission organization, folks, and this is what we get. If you want to pass this around and sort of feel it, but that's it. That's what you get when you're part of this. But it's the memory that's so amazing to me. You were on our hearts when we began this school. Just a place where men and women could come to prepare to become all that God had planned for you to be. So for me, and I hope for you, seminary is more than the acquisition of knowledge. Bob, what do you mean? Like, I came here to study. If all we do is graduate students, smart students, we've missed the original intent. The school was started not just to make you smarter, but to shape your character. To shape you from the inside out. To make you better men and women, husbands and wives, fathers and mothers. If you graduate from here with the highest grade point average, but you don't allow God to chip off some of your rough edges and make you more like Jesus, you will only have received a partial education. Are you with me here? I hope so. Character, integrity, loyalty, faithfulness, humility, kindness, love. These ought to form the foundation of your time here on this hill. We are not just churning out students. We are hoping to make you a better disciple of Jesus Christ. To make disciples who will make disciples. You may be able to parse a Greek or a Hebrew verb, but if you don't have love, you don't have squat. My apologies to Paul for that loose translation of 1 Corinthians 13. I was privileged to be the chairman of the Board of Trustees for that first graduating class. I think there were six. Is that right? Five or six? They're down in the They're down there somewhere, and you'll see it. My signature's on those diplomas that are down there. And there's five or six of them that graduated. As I spoke to that group, I read to them these words from Paul, and I want to share them with you today. You yourselves are our letter of recommendation, written on our hearts to be known and read by all. And you show that you are a letter from Christ, delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. And then I just shared with them how thankful I was that this first graduating class was going to go out and represent this school. And for 30 years now, we've sent men and women out from this school. They are our letter of recommendation of what God does in and through a life when they spend time on this hill. Many have made us proud, haven't they? Some have made us weep. Some started strong, only to crash and burn. Rob mentioned when I started with the convention. When I started the convention in the seminary, I'd been going about 10 years. Somebody handed me about a 3-page, single-spaced paper of folks that were no longer in ministry that had come through the school. Some went on to make huge public impacts. Others ministered away quietly in very difficult places, but remained faithful to their call. One of my mentors along the way said this to me, Bob, always leave a place better than you found it. You ever hear that? If you go camping, when you leave, leave the campsite better than you found it. If you rent a room from the seminary, always leave it better than you found it. Make sure you don't leave a mess for somebody else to clean up. Leave the place better than you found it. Amen? Oh, me. I am thankful for those of you who have come through, for those who have come through our school and who've left us better than they found us. Barry's not here today. He's sick. But I think Barry, when he came through, I think he, even today, he makes us better by being here. Elaine Phillips, I remember having her in a class one time. She just makes us better than she found us. Jeff Christofferson in that first graduating class. There are so many more I could sort of identify of people who made us better because they spent time on this hill. I want to talk to you about one guy I think you may know, Caesar. Caesar, whenever he came, he started in Toronto. He was just him and Mary just started a church. Did you listen to Caesar's thanks to Billy Graham last week? I don't know if you listened to that on Facebook, but he just talked about how he had listened to a Billy Graham message on the TV. God convicted him, but it was several months later. There were some people who came by from a church that Francisco Alar was a part of, and three youth came. They shared the gospel with him, and Caesar's life was forever changed because people had a gospel conversation with him. Well, Caesar, whenever he came here, we brought him here for a new pastor's conference, and I remember we were having it in this room. It's when we still had him in this room. And Caesar, when he was here, he said, I'm going to come to this school one day. I mean, you know how Caesar is. I'm going to come to this school one day. Like, you know. And so I said, okay, that's great. And so Caesar, a few years passed. I didn't see Caesar. About 5 years later, Caesar shows up at school. Him and Mary come to this school. And you know what? When he came, he just made this place a better place. Like, it's like somebody turned up the flame on the evangelism. You know, and guys in school just started talking more and more about the gospel. I mean, it just was amazing what an impact he had. Then he left. We wanted him to go and start another church somewhere in Canada. God called him to Spain. But even when he was in Spain, he sent a message back to the school. Remember whenever he had that sort of video camera on, and he just said, hey guys, love you. The school's great. Keep going. Don't quit. I mean, he left this place better than he found it. And today even, he continues to make us better. Now, we don't want you to be Caesar. We want you to allow Christ to write his story through you. Glenn was talking about this amazing gospel story that God is writing. From Genesis to Revelation to this current day, God is writing this wonderful story of love and redemption, and He invites you to step into that story, to play your part, to play your role, to be the person that He's created you to be. And so that's, I want us to go back and look at that text again that I read to that first graduating class and see if we can find some clue to help us write a letter of recommendation that would bring honor and glory to Christ and that would allow us to step into God's story to become all that He had planned. I think the message is up here. So, let's just look at that together. And I'm going to give you the sort of the context of what I read to that group. It says, are we beginning to commend ourselves again? Or do we need, as some do, letters of recommendation to you or from you? You yourselves are our letter of recommendation written on our hearts to be known and read by all. And you show that you are a letter from Christ delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts. Such is the confidence that we have through Christ toward God, not that we are sufficient in ourselves to claim anything as coming from us, but our sufficiency, don't miss this, our sufficiency, your sufficiency, is from God, who has made us sufficient to be ministers of a new covenant, not of the letter, but of the Spirit. For the letter kills, but the Spirit gives life. Now let's just get a quick refresher of this church in Corinth to understand the context of these verses. Christ had chosen to work through Paul to start the church at Corinth on his second missionary journey. Now, Corinth, you know, was sort of a trading center, this very metropolitan center where there, about 60 miles from Athens, there were all these trading ports, all these sailors. I mean, there was this temple there to Aphrodite or Venus or something like that was there, right, Steve? And so there was all this sort of sexual immorality. And so, in fact, to be called a Corinthian, to Corinthianize, was like this whole idea of sexual immorality that you were in. So it wasn't a compliment to be from Corinth. And so Paul, on his second missionary journey, he shows up in Corinth, he starts the church, and it's just an amazing thing begins to happen. After leaving, some other teachers came in, and some scholars think they were Judaizers, people who were trying to break at the gospel plus something else, plus the law. And so this tension arose between Paul and these teachers and this church that was now being troubled by these new teachers who had shown up in town. And so he's in Ephesus and he makes a quick trip to Corinth to try to correct the problem. And that didn't go well. So he wrote a stern letter to them saying, hey guys, smarten up. We don't have that letter. It's lost somewhere. But now he's waiting for Titus to come back and say, has the relationship been restored? How did they take that letter? Are we good? And Titus has now given Paul this report that the relationship with the majority of Corinthians has been mended. It has been restored. And so he writes the letter of 2 Corinthians to try to just sort of, to just say, let's keep moving forward. 2 Corinthians is one of Paul's most sort of transparent, authentic letters you get to see the heart of a man who loves God. He loves the gospel. He's been transformed by the gospel. He wants to plant churches. God called him to be a minister to the Gentiles, and he was doing the best he could to do that. And so he says in chapter 3, are we beginning to commend ourselves again, or do we need, as some do, letters of recommendations to you or from you? You see, in the ancient world, whenever a teacher would show up, they wouldn't know him from anybody else, and so they would want to know what his credentials were. By what authority was he teaching? And so they would come with these letters. Philemon, I think, is a bit of that kind of thing. And the church in Acts, they were sending letters out to help people to say, this is a teacher from us, and you can trust them. And so Paul was the man that Christ used to start the church, and they wondered, do I need a letter of recommendation like a stranger? That's what Paul said. He says, do I need a letter of recommendation? And then Paul sort of steps back and he says, you Corinthians, you need a letter? You're the letter. You, my brothers and sisters, you are that letter. You're the ones that who validate our ministry. The transformation that Christ has made in your life is the only validation I need. Christ took these sort of wretched sinners that were sort of caught up in all that Corinthian life, and he transformed them. He brought them out of the kingdom of darkness and transferred them into the kingdom of light. And they were amazingly changed. And then he says this, "And you show that you are a letter from Christ, delivered by us, written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God, not on tablets of stone, but on tablets of human hearts." Now, I want you to get this, because I think there are some clues here to help us to learn how to be this letter. He says, first of all, they are a letter from Christ. Others may have letters. They may have letters by human authors to validate them. But in Paul, he's saying, they were created in Christ. Paul had a letter written by the highest authority that Christ had come in and radically changed them. He says, that is my authority. That is the letter that I'm speaking of, that transforming power of Jesus Christ that you have experienced. And then second, Paul says, this letter is related to Paul's ministry. He says, the phrase he translates, delivered by us, that's, he said, Paul's saying, that's the ministry that I had among you. He fulfilled the task entrusted him. He started that Corinthian church. Christ had called him to take the gospel to the Gentiles, and he had been faithful to that calling. And then Paul says this, they were inscribed, or they were written, by the Spirit of the living God. Written not with ink, but with the Spirit of the living God. So he draws a contrast between, you take a piece of a pen, or you, I guess a quill or something, you write on a, and the ink and what is written, you know, it can't respond. It makes no response. The letters remain only lifeless squiggles unless there is something or someone to make sense of them and respond to them. And Paul is saying, there was a response to you that came from your heart, in which the word was sown and it took root. And it produced fruit. He says, that's what happened whenever the Spirit of the living God woke you up, brought you to life. It's interesting. Paul, this great Jewish scholar, before he became this apostle of the Gentiles, he's alluding back to all these great Old Testament allusions. Because in the Old Testament, there's always this reference to the Spirit of the living God, that the people of around Israel, they were worshiping all these lifeless idols, these inanimate idols who had no power, who had no authority. They could not do anything to change a life. But Paul says, the Spirit of the living God, he's the one who brings transformation. He's the one who makes you a living letter. And so what I want to say to you is, this whole idea of becoming a living letter, it's not, I don't want you to go out here and say, oh, I've got to work hard to be a living letter. What I want you to do is, Spirit of God, do the work of God in my life. Spirit of God, come and write in my heart. I surrender my will to your will. And so as letters of Christ, they were to communicate to the world what God has done in Christ and what God's purpose and humanity is for the world. Paul goes on to contrast between these whole idea of fleshy hearts and stone tablets. Again, he's going back to the Old Testament. You would think he would use papyrus, but he doesn't. He says that since letters of recommendation would hardly have been etched on stone, Paul chooses stones because he wants to draw this comparison between his ministry for Christ and Moses' ministry of the law. He's saying, listen, it's not the gospel plus something else. It's the gospel, Christ alone, who makes a man right with God. And so he's bringing out all these allusions to these pictures in the Old Testament. You see, God prefers living hearts to dead stones because they can better communicate what the purposes of the living God are for us and what the presence of the life-giving Spirit can do. So let me just give you some principles here to wrap up so that you can hopefully write a good letter of recommendation just from the life of Paul. Can I do that for you? First of all, ministry is messy. Can I get a witness? Ministry is messy. I mean, when you read 2 Corinthians, if you read the whole book, you just think, here's Paul who loves these people so much, and where did all this tension, where did all this problems, where did all this pain come from? If you step into ministry, whatever ministry, as a church planting team member, as a church planter, as a pastor, of just somebody in a church, you will be disappointed, you will be hurt, you will be misunderstood, you will be mistreated, you will be blessed, you will be encouraged, you will be ecstatic, you will be loved. Christian people can be some of the most kind, loving, generous people you ever meet. And Christian people can be some of the most mean-spirited, hateful, ugly, downright ugly people that you'll ever meet. It's messy. To step into ministry is messy. Is that too harsh? Okay, I just want to be honest with you. Second, I think we all long for love and acceptance and significance. I believe Paul's authenticity and transparency in this letter just shows that. I think he's saying you've gone off chasing off after all these super apostles. They talk about Paul being bald and bow-legged and had some sickness and all that. To look at Paul, you would think there's nothing impressive about him. The only thing impressive about Paul was Jesus. And Paul says, he came to this point where his conclusion is that love and acceptance and significance must be rooted in the gospel of Jesus Christ. Don't try to get your love and acceptance and significance from anyone else. You must get your identity from Christ. The third thing I would say to you is leave this, your part of the world, wherever God plants you, a better place than you found it. Every place Paul showed up, it seemed he left it better than he found it, because he left Jesus there. He left a church there. He left people who were in love with Jesus there. Leave your part of the world. So whenever you do leave this hill, leave it better than you found it. When you move out of seminary housing, leave it better than you found it. When you take on a ministry at a church, don't leave a mess for the next guy to clean up. Leave it better than you found it. Are you still with me? Good. You haven't left me, have you? Like on the blast turn. Part of Send Calgary, there are like 200 communities in Calgary. Many of them don't have any church at all. We want somebody waking up every day praying that the gospel would come to that community. We have so many people groups, so many people who have not had an opportunity to hear the gospel even once. We want somebody waking up saying, we want to leave that community better than we found it because we want to bring the gospel of Jesus Christ to them. We want to have gospel conversations with them. I think we would learn from Paul's life that your life reflects not just on you, but it reflects on this school, but more importantly, it reflects on Christ. You are our letter of recommendation. Represent us well. Represent Christ well. As you leave today, I want you to do a favor for me. I want to give you an assignment. And you're thinking, oh boy. I want you to think of someone that's made an impact on your life, on someone on whose shoulders you're standing. You see, you're in this school because you're standing on the shoulders of some people who've gone before. I gave you the names of some of them, but before that, there were people like John Cunningham and Henry Blackaby and other people who were standing on their shoulders. So each one of us were standing on their shoulders. Would you do this today? I want to encourage you. Write them a note, send them an email, jot them a text, give them a call. Thank them for their investment in your life. Thank them for representing Christ well. There's an old hymn, and it says, the Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Mold me, make me, fill me, use me. Would that be your prayer? Would it be? I want us to sing that before we leave. That'll be our closing. And if you could, if you remember to pray, would you pray? My daughter-in-law goes into surgery tomorrow. She has a surgery. She's going to have a double mastectomy. She has cancer, and she needs our prayers. So if you would pray, I would be very thankful. Let's stand together.
Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Spirit of the living God, fall fresh on me. Make me, mend me, fill me, use me, Spirit of the living God,
go and be a letter of recommendation for Christ.